celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Compass Sports Cards, locally owned and operated at 1620 East Cypress Avenue across from Hill Collision Center, is your home base for trading cards and signed sports memorabilia with modern and vintage sports cards and collectibles. Compass Sports Cards features baseball, basketball, football cards, and is the largest supplier of non-sports Pokemon cards. Buy, sell, or trade with Compass Sports Cards, open from 11 to 6 Monday through Saturday. Do you have a collection? Have it appraised at Compass Sports Cards before or after hours at 1620 East Cypress Avenue. Call 355-2016 or stop by today and check us out on Facebook. Compass Sports Cards.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Skeet, and starting on Saturday, June 22nd at 8 a.m., I'll be hosting a new weekly California Adventure District radio show. There are so many great things happening in our region, and I'll be bringing them all to you every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. I'll have guests from our 12 surrounding counties, including Humboldt, Siskiyou, Trinity, Lassen, Mendocino, and many more. You will be able to plan for a great summer and fall right here in the California Adventure District. Join me every Saturday morning at 8 a.m.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
As restrictions continue to be lifted in Shasta County, many businesses are set to reopen, and KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com wants to help spread the word. So, if you are reopening your business, planning on opening a business for the first time, or are already open for business, KCNR has many advertising packages to choose from. Give us a call at 530-605-4565 and talk to a KCNR representative today. That's 530-605-4565.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency child care, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us. For a better us.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support, as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. For this month, we're reviewing Arturo Fuentes Hemingway Classic. With curves of a supermodel, this Perfecto has a superbly balanced, toothy, and attenuated Cameroon wrapper and pairs exquisitely with a complex filler and binder that indulges the palate with citrus, coffee, cocoa, and cedar. Come down to the shop for your Arturo Fuente Hemingway Classic today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody, listen up! Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
at your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Premier Oil Change has been locally owned and operated since we opened in 2006, enjoying long-term relationships with our team members and loyal guests. Many of our team members have worked with us for over 10 years. Many of our certified technicians have logged over 30,000 oil changes, working on hundreds of different vehicle makes and models. In an ever-changing world, we strive to keep up with change with our extensive training program. It's important to the staff at Premier Oil Change that our customers' cars are well taken care of by experienced, well-trained technicians. So you can depend on your vehicle to get you and your family to your destination. Don't forget that you can earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park or our newest location in Anderson across from Roundtable. Remember, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans' issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5, 1460 AM.
This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
The world is full of obvious things which nobody by any chance ever observes. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Before we get started on today's episode, we want your questions. Every December, we talk about specific questions that we receive from you so we can answer them and make sure that we're addressing your specific needs. So if you have a question, contact us, let us know what it is, so we can answer it for you.
There are a couple ways to do that. You can either find us on Facebook, send us a message that way, or of course, the email address at the end of this episode is a great way to contact not only your questions, but episode ideas and commentary about how fantastic my voice is.
So let's get into today's episode. What's the topic?
We are talking about using your senses, not just what I see or what I hear, but what I'm tasting, what I'm smelling. This is a common bit of advice you hear from third grade teachers. Make sure you include all five senses in the scene.
The reason why senses are so important is that it immerses the reader into the moment with something that they can connect with that otherwise they wouldn't understand. While most of your readers may not know what, say, a homeless person who lives on the streets most of the time and never gets a shower smells like, you do know what a boy's gym locker room smells like after a day of football practice. These are small little details that you can connect the dots to give them an idea of the senses of what they're seeing, hearing, tasting, because readers want to be in the moment. They want to be in the world, and the senses is how you do that.
not necessarily strictly smells, although that is a great one to give an idea of environment. But if your character can taste the rain in the air before the storm, that's something your readers can relate to.
So we mentioned earlier the five senses. We're aware that that's probably what you've been taught. That's what we were taught. That's what we were familiar with. But there are so many more senses than just five.
In this particular case, we're talking about ways that we interact with the world, ways that the world gives our brains information, not necessarily seeing dead people like the sixth sense or an emotional IQ, these other things that are part of the human experience, but literally how you get information from the world.
Physical interactions. The most common that you're going to be using in a book is vision, what they're seeing.
And this tends to be the default for a lot of storytellers because a lot of storytellers also watch TV, also go to the movie theaters. You see and you hear a lot of things in cinema, and therefore when you're seeing the story play out in your head, it's sight and sound based often.
So that's the second sense, is the hearing. Your third is smell. This can be so important. Because people remember smells really well. There are actually studies linking smell with memory. So if you can introduce them to a smell that they are familiar with, you are connecting them with a story on a new level.
Smell is closely intertwined with taste. They're right next to each other on the face, yes, but a lot of the words you're going to use are very similar. That saltiness, that nuttiness. Talk about tea tasting or wine tasting. They will say a perfuminess to the flavor, the bouquet of the wine.
Speaking as someone who has a lot of allergies that affect my sinuses, your smell affects your taste. If I can't smell anything, I really can't taste much. It has to be a very strong flavor for me to taste it.
This particular list has 9 different kinds. We got that list from talkingmatters.com. And what we in kindergarten learned as touch is not only texture, something is soft or silky, but also temperature, something is hot or cold, but also pain.
Which also goes with hot and cold because a lot of pain is associated either with hot or with cold.
Those are all kind of in the touch category, but I wanted to make sure we talked about each of these separately because there are different ways for your character to interpret their environment. It is not only cold, but it is sharp.
You can also have balance as one of the senses. This is really important for characters who, I don't know, maybe are drunk, maybe got drugged, who are usually very graceful and suddenly find themselves tipping and unable to stand up straight.
Also, if your character has emotion sickness or, you know, is on a pirate ship, that sense of balance, especially if it's their first time, takes a little while to get your sea legs.
And then the flip side, get used to land after having sea legs.
And the last sense we're going to talk about kind of goes with balance, and that is proprioception, which is more or less your coordination, your hand-eye coordination.
It's awareness of your body, where it is in relation to things around you.
So I just wrote a scene where a character had a dagger pointed at her kidney. She could guess by his voice how far away his head was, therefore how long the weapon was. So without even looking, she knew where his wrist was, where his elbow, his shoulder. So she could disarm him without looking. That's a great proprioceptive ability and awareness of not only her body, but others around her.
So I want you, our listeners, to think about your main character. What is your main character sensing that you aren't writing into the story? What can you add that will add to the story?
One of the ways that I have dabbled with this in the past is by creating a character who is missing one of these. I have created blind characters just to see if I could get the reader to envision the scene without any sight-based elements around them.
So while you're thinking about your character, what they can use, what may help to remove from them, we want you to follow one rule. Do not use all of the senses at the same time.
Think about your human experience. How often are you aware of all five senses at once, or all nine senses at once?
Most of these are instinctual. Your proprioception especially, your balance, these are instinct. And the only time you notice it is if something is wrong.
And if your character isn't noticing it, then really your reader probably shouldn't be either. That especially is the case for deep POV writers. So somebody who's writing kind of like for first or third person from the character's point of view. If you're writing from an omniscient point of view, it's a little more fluid because you want the reader to be another observer in the story instead of feel like a main character.
So what are the senses good for in writing? What are they used for other than just to give a reader a way to connect?
Understanding these senses and how your character reacts to these senses informs us about the character. Is that smell of chewing gum saccharine, that sickly sweet, or is it nostalgic? Both of those are very different from each other, but they inform about the character who's interpreting that smell.
It can also be used to set a scene. So you have your character noticing the weather, noticing whether it's light or dark outside, noticing what they can see and hear. When you dig deeper into the other senses, then we really get a feel of that scene.
If your character is stepping into an abandoned house for the first time, that musty smell that's a little bit moist, a little bit almost sweet, a little bit nutty.
Very stale.
I don't have to visually describe the corners of the room to give you an idea of being there, what it's like. If you are setting a scene, you are in cinema, it's called a wide shot. If you are establishing everything that's happening in the moment, using your five senses more than just sight is incredibly helpful.
But again, be careful about using all of them at the same time. Go piece by piece. What do they notice first? What would your character notice first? Would it be the smells? Would it be the sights? And then as you get into the scene, separate it a little bit, get into those further details with the other senses.
And of course, just like those undefinable emotions that we spoke about a week ago, all of those undefinable scents and flavors, similes and metaphors are your friend. She smelled like a warm summer's day. I don't really know what a warm summer's day smells like, but there's an emotion and attachment to that particular scent.
The biggest takeaway from today's episode is consider more. What else does your character experience that will help the reader connect with that character? That is the trick of the trade, getting your readers to connect.
This is really the advantage of a text-based entertainment format, of reading a story versus watching it on TV. You can bring your readers to that moment with all of these other senses. And all of that starts with
writing selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writinggroups@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Yet the deepest truths are best read between the lines and, for the most part, refuse to be written. Amos Bronson Alcott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses. And today we're talking about one of my favorite things in the writer's toolbox.
Our topic is subtext. It's those things between the lines, the things that are implied. The things that we've talked about in the past when we tell you about world building and backstory. That is subtext. Subtext adds depth to your characters, to your settings, to your world, to your dialogue, to everything about writing. Which is why when we talk about making your outline or developing your world, developing your characters, that you know so much more about all the characters that you aren't putting in the book, so that your knowledge can be written in subtext. It's those things that you can imply by looking and showing he sees a dog and his muscles tighten and moves to the other side of the street. His breath quickens. So you can imply, yes, he is afraid of dogs and there is a story there without having to explain the story in a page and a half of useless backstory.
I would say this is a good litmus test for a skilled writer. Is there subtext in the moment? We spoke about this during our Diagnosis Writer series over the summer when we focused on dialogue. A lot of what we said was take stuff out of the quotation marks because then you're moving it to subtext and it becomes a more interesting read.
How do you write something without writing it?
One of the ways you can do it is your character probably has a tell. Every time he lies, he runs his fingers through his hair. And then one of the characters can point it out to another one, hey, you ran your fingers through your hair, I bet you're lying. That happens at the beginning of your story. The reader is informed of this particular detail. Now throughout the rest of the story, every time he runs his fingers through his hair, we know he's lying. Then there's this element of depth to the story because it's not only what the truth is of the moment, but what he wants the other characters to believe the truth of the moment is. One of my favorite examples of establishing subtext is from the more modern version of Italian Job. There is this saying between several of the characters that the word fine stands for freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Oh, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. I'm pretending to be okay, but I'm really freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. There's an elegance and an artistry to how they use such a common word in that story because they defined it to have a bunch of subtext attached to it.
So here's the danger of subtext. Say you establish something like that, and then you have a time later that they are using I'm fine literally. Suddenly things are lost in translation to the reader, because they're thinking that it's attached to all the subtext, when really you just kind of thoughtlessly threw in, I'm fine.
Your editor will point this out to you, saying, is this what you intended? Because you could have intended, he's freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. But if you didn't, and you didn't do anything with it, the editor is going to go, hey, this needs to be a different word.
Another use for subtext is to get your readers thinking about the book when they're not reading. This is one of the reasons I love Brandon Sanderson's books. There is so much subtext. Enough subtext that I can reread the book multiple times and still learn something new every time that I had missed before. And when I'm not actively reading, I'm thinking about those little details, those little elements about the stories, the characters, the nuances that just fill the books. That is probably why they're so long.
This bit of detail is especially useful at the end of a chapter because that's what will get people thinking about it while they're driving, when they should be paying attention in school, when they're in the shower. These things, when their mind wanders, if it's wandering to you, goody. That's part of the goal. You want them engaged in your story and thinking about it when they aren't actively reading the book. Subtext is also really good for getting your reader to be thinking in two ways at once. If you're familiar with film, that's called the split screen, where two different things are happening at the same time. Having that subtext established will help your readers understand a lot more of the moment in a lot less acreage on the page, a lot less time spent. We understand what one character is interpreting is different than what another character is interpreting because we know he's lying.
There are a couple of times, especially in writing, where subtext is very important. One of the first ones is when characters are lying. You rarely want to just come out and say, it was a lie. So you want to have those tells, those little nuances that show that without having to say it.
Unless, of course, you have that character who just goes, I don't believe you. They'll just call him out on it. But that is a character choice. And the reader should understand why the character is saying that, because the reader understands the subtext of the situation. Another type of story where you need to have a lot of subtext is, of course, the mystery. Because everyone is looking at all of the other characters and going, did this person commit the murder? Or did this person steal the jewels? Or whatever. Every single character is being addressed with a little bit of subtext because the reader is trying to figure it out.
You also want to have enough subtext in your mysteries so that your readers feel satisfied at the end of the book. Especially with murder mysteries, where it's a whodunit, you want the reader to be able to pick up on little subtleties here, little subtleties there, that lead them to, by the end of the book, having a pretty good guess about who the bad guy is. And that is all done in subtext.
Another great use of subtext comes with introverts.
They're not going to be blatant about their emotions. So you need the subtleties of subtext when you have a character who is an introvert, speaking as an introvert.
Subtext is the path you take as an author to make sure it's believable for your readers.
You also want subtext when you have characters that are falling in love. This one is difficult for me because when it comes to relationships and emotions, I'm pretty straightforward. So writing a subtle falling in love over time romance is not easy. But this can help your readers feel emotionally connected. They can feel like they're falling in love at the same time without being beaten over the head with it.
One of my favorite moments in the Jack Reacher series is when Reacher has been friends with and commanding over this woman who is incredibly strong, incredibly powerful. She hates being touched. There's one moment when they're in a life and death situation. They know one of them is probably going to die tomorrow unless everything happens perfectly, which of course it does. In a time when he would have slept with anyone else, he didn't. He respected her and he didn't touch her, but she reached out and put her hand on his for like 4 seconds and then walked away and went into her room. But that was the first time after like 20 years of being friends, the first time they had physical contact. And there was so much subtext in the emotions of that moment that I just loved it so much.
Subtext is also fun when you need something to sound ominous or to carry a second meaning, like the example from the Italian Job of I'm fine.
If I have a character who is bleeding out and the mother figure is holding him in her arms and she goes, everything's going to be okay. You know, as a reader, everything is not going to be okay.
Another word that carries a lot of subtext is goodbye.
If you watch a fair amount of TV, pay attention to when they end a phone call with goodbye. That feeling, that sinking in your gut, that's intentional by the writers. Of course, when a character is lying for the sake of someone's emotional status, oh, I'm just kidding.
They're not. They said it for a reason. They're not actually kidding. There's a bit of truth behind every just kidding.
Oh, I don't care.
Yeah, they do.
They wouldn't bring it up if they didn't.
Yeah. Or, I don't know, how many times have you met a kid where you ask them what happened and they're like, I don't know.
There is plenty of subtext in all of these phrases to throw in, but use them intentionally because your reader will infer something that you might not have meant to imply.
If you have more questions about the use and what subtext is, look up actors talking about subtext. They have to deal with this a lot because screenplay writers write the text and then the actors have to act the subtext. And as the writer, you are kind of both. You need to write the text, imply the subtext in a way that your readers can latch onto it and live it like an actor would.
So if something feels wrong in the story that you're writing, try implying as much of it as you can with subtext and then bringing it back to literal, because that will give you a much richer story. Instead of him saying, I don't want to go fight the dragon, he can hesitate in putting his armor on, and he can go, well, we could always fight the dragon tomorrow. You can start implying all of these things with subtext if you're feeling that your story is falling a little flat.
A lot of the time, you just want to make it smaller. Go down onto a smaller level, which we will be talking about in a week.
But until then,
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writinggroups@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
You could be writing The Book That Changes Your Life, Brandon Sanderson.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses. Today we are continuing our series on frequently asked questions by you, the listeners, and questions that we see recur often in forums worldwide.
Today's question is, what makes a book unforgettable? What makes a book impactful?
So much of this is subjective, and it comes down to understanding not only your audience, but yourself. What's going to impact you as the author, as our opener implied, but also understanding your audience. Because if the book is a romance, it will not impact me at all.
But you don't read romance for a reason. So know your audience is the first key, and know your genre. We'll be talking a little bit more about knowing your genre later this month, but let's get into how to make a book impactful. First off, think of your favorite book. Why is it your favorite? Is it the plot? Is it the style of writing? Or is it connection?
The book that comes to mind right now is my favorite because it entertained me in a way that I connected with. There was an emotional connection there between myself and the main character whom I have nothing in common with, but I felt that character and the problem that they were trying to overcome in a way that I internalized as a reader.
And that is the first key to making a book impactful. You have to have some kind of emotional connection with it. It doesn't have to be love. It doesn't have to be the romance side of it. But what does your audience connect with to create that emotion? The biggest thing is that you need to have a real character. Your characters need to be relatable. They feel real emotions, real struggles, things that even though we have nothing in common with them, they live in a completely different world, a completely different universe, we can still see that character and say, I understand them.
The book that comes to mind right now, the main character was basically wiped blank mentally, and they reinstalled a bunch of programming to make him the ultimate CIA agent. He still has this not only moral quandary about what's right and wrong outside of his programming, but this struggle for identity. And a lot of the problem is solved once he figures out who he is outside of his programming.
And the one thing you need to avoid when trying to create that emotional connection with the reader through your characters is perfection. Readers do not connect with perfection because it is unattainable. They can never see a perfect character and say, I know what that feels like because I am also perfect. Another way to make sure your book has impact is to know yourself, whether you are writing for art or whether you are writing for entertainment.
There is a lot of overlap in these two circles of art and entertainment, but the way I define it is art is something you as the audience invest in some way, and then entertainment is just everyone ingests it the same way. Everyone solves the puzzle the same way. Everyone watches the Marvel movie the same way. Art should be a connection to the audience. You understand that piece of art differently than I do.
I will read a book once for entertainment, and then I will read it again to appreciate it as art. Art is why I read Brandon Sanderson novels, because there's so much depth there that I can immerse myself into the world, the characters, the settings.
So art changes you on the other side.
Yes. So let's go on to the next way to make a book have impact. If you want your readers to feel impact from the book, they need to learn something. This applies to fiction as well as nonfiction. A lot of nonfiction is out there to teach a lesson specifically, tell you how to do something, give you instruction, self-help, whatever. Fiction, though, there are other ways to teach people something. In this process, for a reader to learn something, they need to learn something about themselves. They need to learn something about the other. They need to learn something about the world. You can do this by showing different point of views, not actually writing from different point of views, but showing us what it is like to live with a disability, what it's like to live with depression, what it's like to live with whatever, and show people a different way of life. How many times have you read a book when you're not feeling that great in your life and you see the challenges this character overcomes? Because you lived that life with them, at the end you go, I can deal with my life because they dealt with that and I lived with them through it.
Going back to the making sure your characters aren't perfect, if your character doesn't struggle with this, your reader won't either. Your character should fail at leaving the abusive relationship so that when they finally succeed, there's that triumph. And there's a victory there that the readers can relate to. They can feel that and maybe have the courage to leave their own abusive relationship if that's where they are.
And in general, make the readers think about something, anything, if you want to have that deep artistic impact that we're talking about.
It was actually a theater teacher tell me that he would 1,000 times prefer somebody to hate his work than to be bored by it. Being bored is the worst sin you can have in the entertainment world. And that's something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. If you've ever read the Lord Fowlsbane collection, about halfway through that first book, you want to throw it against a window and walk away because you are so annoyed, and I wanted to strangle the main character. If I could reach through a book and affect my character's lives in some way, it wouldn't be to hug a character and go, there, it's okay. It would be to strangle that character. I hated it, but it sticks in my mind. I was not bored by it.
And that goes back to the emotion. Make them feel something. Make them think about something. It can be anything, but they need to have some kind of response.
That doesn't mean you need to preach at your readers.
Oh, please don't.
Please don't.
Unless you're writing something faith-based or are a reverend of some kind writing a sermon in a novel, you don't need a moral of the story.
I would say even then, if it's fiction, avoid that. You can have a side character who has this particular philosophy and that's a character trait, great, but preaching at the reader will get them to close it basically every time. The moment they realize they're being preached at, they're not going to want to continue. I would say the exception there is younger than 12 or so.
A lot of those books are designed to teach the kid how to be a better person. And because kids aren't very good with subtle ideas, a lot of those stories are very blunt. Of, this is how you do this thing, this is how you be a good person, through teaching them with birds or animals of some kind.
Invest in your future, Three Little Pigs.
And as we mentioned at the beginning, you really do need to keep your target audience in mind. As we've discussed, we look for different connections in books. I look for those characters. I look for the struggles, the things that I want to understand because I don't experience it personally, but I know people who do. Reading those struggles helps me broaden my mind. I love that learning and I love the emotional connection from it. But sometimes I just want to be entertained.
Escaping from the world is a fantastic and beautiful thing. Wishing that life were different, you as an entertainer, as an author, are providing that, and sometimes that escape is all they need.
If you have people reading a cozy romance story, like people who watch Hallmark holiday movies, they're not looking for deep, complicated plot. They're not looking for that. They're looking for the emotional connection. If your target audience is somebody who reads memoirs, they're looking for that personal story, that deeply personal story that shows someone in real life overcoming a challenge.
I know people will argue with me on this particular fact, but I think a lot of action becomes incredibly philosophical because there's this debate of the value of life versus morals. Is it okay to kill this person and not this person because this one's a bad guy and this one's a good guy? This internal struggle that a lot of action characters have is deciding how we interact with other people, and in a lot of ways delivering a kind of moral justice, a philosophical fairness to the scene with lots of punches and kicks and bam bam.
With a lot of entertainment along the way.
So I have to ask you, which book on the shelves that I can go to Amazon and buy right now, which book has affected you the most?
My own book. Just like our quote at the beginning said, you could be writing the book that changes your life.
Ted Dekker, in the same way we say write selfishly, he says write to discover. He's saying ask yourself these questions and then figure out the answer by writing the book.
Learn about yourself through learning about your world and your characters.
Your characters will teach you more than any school teacher ever has, more than Lee or I ever could in our hours upon hours of podcasting. Your characters have so much to tell you, but they can't say anything until you
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
The best investment is in the tools of one's own trade. Benjamin Franklin.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hall.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Today's question is, what kind of software is best to use to write a book? And what about formatting that book?
My pastor has this saying. People would ask him all the time, what's the best version of the Bible? And his answer is always, the one you'll read. To answer this question, I would say the same thing. The one you'll actually write the book in.
The one you'll use. Every piece of software has its benefits, its negatives. You need to find the one that works for you.
We're approaching this question because we see it all the time. This episode, we are just talking about the different options that are out there, our experiences with them, so that you can know where to start in your own research.
So we'll be talking about software programs that help from the beginning to the end of the publishing process. Let's start with writing the book, the best software pieces to write the book. There are many, but the simplest ones are, of course, Microsoft Word, Google Docs, LibreOffice.
And my personal favorite, pen and paper.
Typewriter for funsies.
The non-writing world will automatically think Microsoft Word. That's what I do my typing in. That's what I am writing my essays for school in. That's going to be the default that a lot of people go to.
One problem with Microsoft Word, there is a cost. I personally don't like it because of that.
That's also why I use LibreOffice. It's a useful tool for people who are not wanting to be online constantly while they're writing, if you don't have great Wi-Fi or whatever where you are, but you want to get a bunch of text just on a page.
LibreOffice, Google Docs, Microsoft Word, they're all simple writing tools. I think Microsoft Word and Google Docs have basic spell check and grammar check designed into them. My biggest problem, though, aside from cost, is that you have to manually save. I prefer Google Docs personally because it auto-saves everything I do, and I won't lose my work.
A lot of people are asking about voice-to-text as well. If you're on a computer, the Dragon speech recognition software is one of the more popular ones.
Phones are a great resource for this. I know someone who has problems with their hands, so she writes almost solely through voice recognition on her phone to Google Docs.
There's one more name in this category that you're going to see fairly often, and that's Scrivener.
It's a little, I think, more advanced than your basic word processing. There's a few other different word processors like Scrivener, such as LivingWriter and a few others. These can be useful for someone who wants a little more advanced help, but it does come at a cost. If you know how to write, if you're comfortable with that, and you have resources to get a good editor, then getting an advanced word processing software isn't absolutely necessary. Scrivener is also good for people who want to do other kinds of writing than just novel or fiction writing. I have not personally used it because I have ways to do them that are free.
Last thing I want to mention in this category is a program called Celtix. C-E-L-T-X is specifically for screenwriting and stage writing. That might be one you check out.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.